Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
Let's bring in Ray Dittinger. Ray, it's always great to hear from you. First of all, how are you doing?
Doing fine, Steve. How about yourself?
Doing great. Thanks for asking. All right, so this is exciting news when it comes to Tommy and me, because you are, it's not just the fact that it's back, but you've got a big time actor that's going to play Tommy McDonald.
Yeah, we do. Gordon Clapp, who was on all 12 seasons of NYPD Blue, and in fact, what was a very good cast. I mean, David Caruso, Jimmy Smits, I mean, Dennis France. I mean, they had some really good people.
Yes.
And the only actor from that show that won an Emmy was indeed Gordon Clapp. So the Bucks County Playhouse in New Hope decided that the run last year was so successful that they wanted to bring the play back again this year, and this time they wanted to do it as their own production. So they hired a different director, and they hired an all-new cast of TV veterans and some Broadway people, and they're bringing them in, and we're going to do Tommy and Me all over again at the Bucks County Playhouse starting in just a couple of weeks. We're going to be there for a full month, and Gordon Clapp is now I've gotten to know him. I never met him before until we started rehearsal, but he's a great guy, and as it turns out, even though he grew up in New England, he grew up as a Tommy McDonald fan. Because, you know, he was the smallest kid in his neighborhood. He always, you know, wanted to play football with the big guys. And, you know, when he watched the NFL on TV back then in the 60s, he took a liking to Tommy McDonald. And here he is getting the opportunity to play him on stage, and he's really excited about it.
That's tremendous. Because he still spends a lot of his time, I think, up in Vermont and in Boston most of the time. And the fact that he's a big Tommy McDonald fan, I think that's really cool.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, when I met him, I fully expected that I was going to have to spend like a whole day explaining to him who Tommy McDonald was. And,
right.
No. He said, when I was a kid, he was my favorite player. He said, I followed the Patriots. He said, but that was the early days of the AFL. But, you know, watching football on TV, the guy that I couldn't take my eyes off of was Tommy McDonald. He said, it's really a kick to come down here and actually find myself playing him on stage. So he's really into it, and he's a terrific actor. And you have to be. I mean, they've only got 3 weeks to learn to play and rehearse it and get it on stage. So you have to be pretty good to be able to do that. And Gordon is he's as good as it gets. He's really, really good.
You know what's interesting about that is that I too grew up in New England, and I too grew up when it was the AFL. So the Boston Patriots were like, okay, fine. And even though the training camp was 20 miles from where I grew up. But when it came to the Eagles, Tommy McDonald was the guy I looked at. That's the weird part about that. That his story mirrors my story.
Yeah, ever since I wrote Tommy and Me, which goes back to 2016 now, you know, we produced it every year since then, with the exception of 2020, which was the COVID year. But we keep bringing it back, and every time we bring it back, I keep running into people that from all over the place. I mean, in Philadelphia, it's a given. I mean, that he's still worshipped
sure.
here. But I keep running into people and say, you know, I'm not even from here. You know, I'm from New York, or I'm from Ohio, or, you know, I'm from Dallas, or, you know, but, you know, watching football in the 60s when pro football became a thing on TV,
yes.
My favorite player was Tommy McDonald. And I fully understand that. I mean, he was not only one of the best players of that era, but one of the most colorful because of his size, because of his hustle, because, you know, just because of his feistiness, you know, the last guy not to wear a face mask. I mean, the whole thing. I mean, he had a magic about him that attracted people, whether you were an Eagles fan or not an Eagles fan. He was a guy that you tuned in every week to watch.
What do you think he would think of all this?
Oh, I know, because Tommy lived long enough to see the play.
Yeah,
he got to come and see it in the first year when we staged it in 2016, and he couldn't believe it. I mean, he really couldn't believe seeing his life story brought to the stage. It just really blew him away. It was he only got to see it live and in person the one time, but you know, when it was over, I mean, he stayed in the theater for about, you know, it had to be an hour and a half after the show, posing for pictures and signing autographs and just loving the attention. I mean, he was in his 80s by then and, you know, not in the best of health. But the opportunity to come out and see his life story on stage, see a lot of his highlight moments played on the screen, and then afterwards just bask in the glow of it. I mean, he just loved it. And, you know, and before he left that day, he gave me a hug and he said, "Boy, you did me a great favor. You let me be Tommy McDonald again," which was, you know, that's probably the nicest thing anybody said ever since we started doing this.
You've seen various actors play this out. Now, it's a play, so there are lines they have to. Have you seen various ways that they've delivered it and their own sort of interpretation, but using the same words?
Well, only two actors have done it. For the first 6 years that we did it, it was an actor named Tom Teddy, who is a Philadelphia-based actor, and he did all the other runs. And now this time, it's going to be Gordon is going to be doing
okay.
it. But the advantage we have with both of them is that, as I told you, Gordon, even though he grew up in New England, grew up a Tommy McDonald fan, and Tom Teddy, the actor who played him for the first 6 years, is from Philadelphia and was going to the Eagles games at Franklin Field as a kid with his family, and Tommy McDonald was his favorite player. So, you know, so both of these guys are coming to it, you know, with a full knowledge and appreciation of who Tommy McDonald was and really, really excited about doing it. And, you know, as Gordon said to me the other day, he said, "The last thing I just finished doing a couple weeks ago was I was doing a one-man Robert Frost play on tour." And he said, "Now I come to this." He said, I can tell you right now that Tommy McDonald is a lot more fun than Robert Frost.
No doubt about that.
No,
I know President Kennedy loved Robert Frost, but this is more fun, okay? All right?
No doubt about that.
Yeah, a lot more fun. When you wrote this, did you ever envision it would have a one-month run and would have continued runs that would lead up to a one-month run?
No, I didn't, Steve. When I wrote it, I mean, I had never written a play before, so I didn't even know if it was ever going to be done even once. You know, I mean, I wrote it because I just kind of I really loved the story. It was something that I lived. You know, he was my favorite player as a kid. You know, I got his autograph when I was 10 years old. You know, he let me carry his helmet as he walked to the practice field. And it was the start of a friendship that continued on. And then it evolved when I became a sports writer and a sports journalist and a Hall of Fame voter. I found myself in a position to try and get him the one thing that he wanted most in life, which was a spot in the Hall of Fame. And so, you know, that's really kind of the whole story is how this little kid who gets handed his hero's helmet when he's 10 years old is leading the fight to try and get his hero into the Hall of Fame. And then when he finally does get voted in 1998, he asked me to be his presenter. So we are sharing that moment on the steps of the Hall of Fame together. It was such a neat story. I wanted to tell it. I just wasn't exactly sure what was the best way to tell it. So I got this idea. Let me try it as a play. And, when we did it in 2016, I was thrilled, and I thought, wow, what a great experience. What a great 3 weeks. We sold out the house every night. You know, Tommy and his family got to see it. I mean, it was really wonderful. It was really, really one of the highlights of my life, to be honest with you. But I really thought that was it. You know, I kind of thought, you know, the last night when they took down the set and they packed up the props and put everything away, I figured that was kind of the end of it. And, wow, wasn't that fun? And then, you know, then it came back the next year, and then it came back the next year. And other theaters heard about it, and they wanted it. And, you know, last year we actually brought it to Hershey, as you know.
Yes.
And we got to do it in the Hershey Theater, which was really cool because Hershey was where I met Tommy for the first time because that's where the Eagles had their training camp in the 1950s. And so we did it at the Hershey Theater, and we had almost 1,000 people there for one of the shows, including Dick and Carol Vermeil. So,
yeah.
I mean, it's been a wonderful experience, Steve, that has gone far beyond, I think, everybody's expectations. And certainly mine.
If I recall how the Hall of Fame voting works, that when you get into the room, somebody has to get up and talk about said individual as to what they think their credentials happen to be.
Correct.
Now, I will assume that you were the person that got up in front of the group and talked about his credentials.
I did.
And I did.
It fell on me to do that, yes.
Yeah, yes. What did you tell them?
I kept it, I played it straight. You know, I didn't go into the whole boyhood hero thing. I didn't go into, when I was 10 years old, I carried his helmet and got his autograph. Because I felt like that would somehow weaken his case. If I came off like a fanboy, I didn't think that the other voters would take me seriously. So I didn't even bring any of that stuff up. I mean, I just played it straight, you know, with his stats, which were plenty. I mean, at that time, I mean, he had the sixth most catches of anybody in NFL history. He had the fourth most yards, and he had the second most touchdowns. So I thought it was a pretty easy case to make, and I couldn't really understand why 15 years after he retired, he had never even been a finalist. So I got up and made the pitch, and I thought this was a layup. You know, I didn't think there was any way he wasn't going to make it, and they took the vote, and he wasn't even a finalist again. And I mean, it just broke my heart because I felt like, I let him down. And it was another 10 years of just writing letters and calling people on the phone and stuff and campaigning that got him back on the ballot in 98. And then in 98, he finally did get in. And 30 years after he retired, and it was a long wait and a lot of disappointments along the way, but he finally got in. And when he got in, he asked me to be his presenter. And that weekend was one I'll tell you I'll never forget.
How long? I mean, you're a writer. How long did it take you to write that speech, and how many times did you practice it before you delivered it in Canton?
Oh man. It took me a good 2 months to write my speech because I was told, we were all told, all the presenters were told that we had 4 minutes.
Right.
We were told that the presenters had 4 minutes and the inductees had 6 minutes. So I wanted to make those 4 minutes count. And, I wrote and rewrote that speech. Oh, it had to be 20 times. But then you have to get up and deliver it, you know, and you're there at this podium on the steps of the Hall of Fame, and you get up there to the microphone and you look to your left, and, you know, there's Ray Nitschke and Roger Staubach and Gail Sayers and Dick Butkus, and you look to your left and there's, you know, Bob Lilly and, Bill George and Mike Singletary and you're surrounded by, and these are the greatest players that ever played this game, you know, and they're all sitting on chairs around you looking at you. And I mean, if you have any sense of the history of the game, or if you revere the history of the game the way I do, to be in that position and then given the speech for the guy who is your boyhood idol, it's one of the few times in my life that I can honestly say I felt my knees shaking when I got up to the microphone. And, you know, I got through it, thank goodness, but it was really an unforgettable moment. And then, of course, introducing Tommy and then the hug that we had, and then watching him go up to the microphone and give the speech that no one will ever forget, was quite a weekend. There's not a time that I've gone back to the Hall of Fame since then, and I've been back a number of times, including last year for Dick Vermeil, that people don't recognize me and say, "Oh, wait, you were the guy that presented Tommy McDonald," and they start talking about, you know, Tommy getting up with the boombox and dancing to Stayin' Alive and all the crazy stuff that he did that no one had ever done before and no one will ever do again. But I mean, that was 1998, and the people in Canton are still talking about it.
One of the I think little known things about Tommy is that he owned Tommy McDonald Enterprises. And it was, and he was, you know, he did not paint himself. I mean, he had people that created this stuff and so forth. But what got him into that? That said to him, he says, "Okay, this is an enterprise I want to be in." I mean, he had a Joe DiMaggio portrait that sold for $4,000 that one of his people painted.
Yes. When he was playing for the Rams, after he had left Philadelphia and went to Dallas, Dallas traded him to the Rams. He went out to the Rams and had a couple of really, really good years with the Rams. I mean, he and Roman Gabriel really had it cooking there for a few years in L.A. And so he became real popular out on the West Coast. And one day he was coming out of practice, and there was a guy standing in the parking lot waiting for him, and he had painted an oil portrait of Tommy. And he said, I love watching you play. You're my favorite player. And here, I'm an artist, and I painted this portrait, and it's yours." And he gave it to Tommy, and Tommy said, "Wow, this is beautiful." And And the guy gave him his card and said, if I can ever do anything for you, let me know. And then, you know, Tommy brought it home and he hung it up. And it occurred to him, you know, athletes and, you know, celebrity-type people, you know, they get trophies all the time. They get plaques all the time. They get framed photographs all the time. I mean, Tommy's house was full of it. But he said, you know, this is different. You know, a really beautiful oil portrait of you, you know, nobody gets these. So he got the idea of just, you know, hey, listen, why don't we, you know, make a business out of this? So he called the guy back and asked if he was interested. And the guy said, yeah. And he said, well, we'll partner in this. And, you know, and you're the artist and I'm the marketer. And so Tommy went around and to all of his different sports contacts said, hey, instead of handing a guy a plaque this year, give him an oil portrait. And so that's how it started. And it just grew and grew and grew. And, gee, I mean, by the time Tommy went in the Hall of Fame in 98, his company was doing all the oil portraits for all the Heisman Trophy winners. He was doing all the oil portraits for all the Supreme Court justices, doing them for all the Maxwell Club winners and all the Miss Americas. So it became, I mean, it became a very, very successful career for him, even after football.
One final question about him. Everybody knows that Tommy was not big in stature. He was only about 5'9", maybe 175, 180 pounds.
Not quite. 172 on a good day.
172 on a good day. But ultra, ultra talented with impeccable instincts. How much do you think people were attracted to him because he looked like the everyday guy?
Oh, that was a big part of it. Oh, Steve, that was a big part of it. I mean, that was a big part of it. I know that's why so many kids, like when I first crossed paths with them, I was 10. But every kid in Philadelphia loved Tommy McDonald. I mean, we were all Eagles fans, but I mean, as a kid, you couldn't, as you know, you admired Chuck Bednarik, but you couldn't relate to Chuck Bednarik.
Right.
I mean, he was,
yes.
You know, I mean, he was in his 30s, and he had, you know, and he was huge. But everybody could relate to Tommy. In fact, I remember when I first met him. The locker room in Hershey, and I was waiting for him, and he was just a rookie then, 1957. When he came out, I was 10 years old, and he wasn't much bigger than me. At least it didn't seem that way. I mean, all the other guys that were coming out, I mean, were just enormous in their pads and all that stuff. And he came out, and he looked like he was about 15 years old, and he wasn't much bigger than I was. So I think that's a big part of it, is that you see this guy who looks so ordinary. He looks like the guys you're going to school with. He looks like the guys that are in the playground with you. But yet he's the most explosive receiver in the league. And you look at his stats back in those days, I mean, just amazing. The 1960 season is probably the best example. He only caught, it was only a 12-game season. He caught 39 passes, but 13 of them were for touchdowns.
Right.
His ratio of touchdowns per reception are still to this day the third highest in all of football. The only two guys that have a higher ratio of TDs to catches are Don Hudson, who played for the Packers back in the 30s, and Paul Warfield. And then Tommy's right there in the top three. And those numbers will stand up. Those numbers will stand up in any era.
Well, this is going to take place at the Bucks County Playhouse. It'll start the 19th of May, run through June 17th. Gordon Clapp will star in it. Nick Corley is going to direct it.
Right.
And the heart and soul of it is Ray Dittinger, who will tell you that Tommy's actually the heart and soul of it, but that's, you know.
Oh, he is and always will be. And one of the fun things about it is that his children and his grandchildren keep coming back every year. I mean his kids and his grandkids come back every single year. Chris and Tish and Sherry and Tommy Jr. I mean, they come back every year. And the guys in the cast this year, because it's a whole new cast, I told them that, and they can't wait to meet the McDonald family. And the McDonald family's really excited about coming and meeting them. And they're great. I mean, I was talking to them last year when we played Bucks County, and you know, Chris, who's his oldest son, who later played at the University of Delaware, you know, said to me, you know, what the great thing about your play is, it's kept Dad alive for us. Which, I mean, I had never really thought about it that way, but I can see that now, that every year they can come back and see this play, and it's like they get to spend those few hours with their father again, which is really a beautiful thing.
Well, it's always a beautiful thing to catch up with you and talk about this. So thank you so much for the time you gave us today. Always appreciate it, and we know this is going to be another huge success. People love it.
Yeah, they sure do, and they keep coming back, and I hope they come back again this year. The Bucks County Playhouse in New Hope, it's a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful theater right on the Delaware River, and if you can come on out. We open May 19th, we run through June 17th, so hopefully, even if you got to see it before, it's an all-new production with some great actors, so please come out and see us.
Ray, wonderful. Thank you so much.
All right, thank you, Steve. Always a pleasure.